Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dot Foil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. This week, today through Thursday, we're talking about climate change, and the occasion for this series here on the Radio Cafe is that the New Mexico Environmental Improvement Board is hearing a petition starting a week from today, Monday of next week, brought by New Energy Economy that would cap carbon dioxide emissions for utilities and the oil and gas industries in New Mexico. And so we're going to be talking about climate change and its many manifestations all week. Right now, I'm joined by John Fogarty and Marielle Nanasi of New Energy Economy. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, first of all, let's talk about what is being proposed. What is this petition? What would a carbon cap in New Mexico look like?
Well, first of all, Mary Charlotte, I want to thank you for having the courage to go in depth about the issue of climate change. I think the media coverage in general around climate has been reprehensible, and I think you are devoting an entire week and 4 hour to look at the public health impacts, the economic justice issues, the opportunities that are available by beginning to solve climate change is actually absolutely key. So, first of all, thank you for doing this.
And no problem. Are you kidding me? It's incredibly important, and I think one of the things that we need to talk about, and we will talk about, among other things, later in the week, the economic impacts of not doing anything. I mean, we're in a very precarious situation here, which not a lot of people know about. But let's go on, and thank you, and let's talk about the carbon cap.
Sure. Well, firstly, what is needed is international agreements on climate change. This is a global problem. We need international agreements. But the failure of the climate negotiations earlier in the year in Copenhagen showed the importance of taking action at the country level or even the state level. Unfortunately, in the United States, federal action on climate change has just been stopped. The Senate last week agreed, they said, we're not going to do anything on climate change. So essentially, all the progress, all the work that has been done on climate change at the federal level fell apart. The first hearings on climate change were in 1978. Nothing has been done. James Hansen spoke very eloquently about it in 1988, saying, this is going to be the fundamental problem that future generations face. That was more than 20 years ago, and nothing has been done. And now Congress, again in the year 2010, is saying we're not going to do anything. So what is to be done? We began looking at, well, what can be done at the state level?
So basically, the world isn't doing anything, the nation isn't doing anything, so at the state level, that's the only place we have left to act.
Right. Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis, many years ago, very articulately said, the states are the laboratory of democracy. And that's where you can get closest to real action, to the desires, the wants of the people. Because there is a voice that can be heard by the policymakers. And if you look at the polls have been pretty stable over the years, over the past 5-10 years. Americans want action on climate change. The recent polls, more than 60% of Americans, even despite the, quote, climate gate and all of these kind of spurious media events, Americans still think that we need and desire climate action. So what's to be done? Well, the action needs to happen at the state level. It's not going to happen at the federal level. It's not happening at the international level. What we have done is asked the State Environmental Improvement Board, which is a board that was created by the state legislature. It's a 7-member board. The members are appointed by the governor. And we have asked that board, which regulates air and water quality, which protects public health, we've asked them to reduce global warming emissions by 3% a year for the next 3 years and to set a target to reduce emissions by 25% below 1990 levels by 2020. And that number sounds a little wonky. Essentially what it is, it's a number that was created by the best scientists in the world, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, who said, developed nations need to reduce dramatically the emissions, global warming emissions. They need to reduce emissions by at least 25 to 40% below 1990 levels by 2020 if we're going to avoid runaway climate change, if we're going to avoid some of the very dramatic changes that we're already starting to see in the world.
And so if we do this on the state level, I mean, I don't think anybody is fooling themselves or each other that if the state of New Mexico, in the absence of anybody else doing anything, puts a cap on carbon emissions, carbon dioxide emissions, that that's going to solve the problem of climate change. But what will it do? I mean, is it an inspiration for other states around us to do something, or what will it actually do?
Well, I think the most important thing, and I think your listeners are going to hear the rest of the week from some very articulate leaders and scientists working on climate change, that we need everything to be done. Really, it's all hands on deck. Your listeners are going to hear from Paul Epstein, probably the most prominent public health leader on climate in the United States, talk about what the public health impacts are. We need everyone possible to be stepping up and doing things. So New Mexico is an oil and gas producing state. It's a coal producing state. So New Mexico taking a leadership role, showing how we can begin to reduce emissions here, is absolutely critical. And it can serve as a role model for other energy producing states. It can serve, I think very importantly, as a impetus for Congress to take action. Again, Congress is doing nothing. If the states are going to begin to create a patchwork of regulations that makes it more difficult for industry to lead, eventually Congress is going to pick this up and act.
I think that there's an opportunity here for all of us, every single one of your listeners, to be a climate leader, because frankly, the senators have been on a holiday, and we're seeing the results of the ravaging of climate. Fresh water supplies are dwindling. We see what we call freakish storms, and all of this is happening, and really nobody's doing anything about it. And so it's actually pretty empowering to say, okay, nobody else is doing anything. The polluters have this position of, we're not going to do anything. So we are taking it upon ourselves.
As citizens.
As citizens. Yeah. As citizens to say, wait a second, we need regulation. The emissions that are happening in New Mexico, this petition would cover about 40% of the emissions. So it would address a significant portion of that. And we're asking them to reduce them 3% a year, which is doable.
I think another important note is that when we say we, there are 17 co-petitioners who have joined New Energy Economy in this effort, including the New Mexico Pediatric Society, the League of Women Voters, Voices for Children, Physicians for Social Responsibility. So there's a whole host of groups and organizations and individuals that are standing up and saying, we need to do something about this. This is a fundamental problem, and it's also a fundamental opportunity. We have some wind companies, solar companies, the Solar Energy Association, others who are standing up and saying, we need to take action. We need to do something on this, because if we begin to invest in clean energy technologies, begin to invest in energy efficiency, New Mexico can be a leader in the new energy economy. And in fact, the states that step up and take a leadership role on climate are going to be to have the engines to drive their economy in the future years.
Well, this is the big argument that doing something like this, putting a carbon cap on, would hurt the economy. And here you are asking for 3% reduction a year. You can say it's not very much, but we're a state that is experiencing growth. So how can you have economic growth and population growth and have a reduction and have the energy that our state is demanding?
There's actually, people don't know it, but there's actually more people employed right now in the United States working on wind than there is all of coal. And that's what we want to do. We want to put more people to work doing things like weatherization and energy efficiency. I just read a statistic that said that if the states with the lowest energy efficiency would just match the states with the highest energy efficiency, we would reduce our carbon emissions by 20% by 2020. That's an amazing amount of carbon reductions. It would also affect, of course, people with the least amount of resources to have an energy efficient home. It's not that we don't know what to do, it's that there is basically a monopoly who's in charge, who's in power, who's got a stranglehold on the politics.
And a lack of leadership, frankly. There was a meeting earlier in the year where a group of investors from around the world came together representing $13 trillion in capital. And they said,
that's a lot of money.
It's just sitting on the sidelines, basically. They said, we're waiting to invest, but we need one thing. we need a price on carbon. We need a cap on carbon. When we have that market signal that we know that there's going to be a price on coal, a price on gas, we're ready to invest in energy efficiency, solar, wind, geothermal, but we need that assurance. And when that happens, you can imagine $13 trillion of investment. What is that going to do to our economy? How is that going to create really, literally millions of jobs?
Well, especially in a sunny state, solar technology is advancing little by little, sometimes by leaps and bounds. You can imagine gigantic solar utilities, as well as people putting solar panels on their houses in states like New Mexico and Arizona and so on.
For sure. I think once we as a society recognize the health costs, the public health costs, the long-term impacts of carbon dioxide and global warming pollution, and we take that into account and we factor that cost into those cheap, dirty fuels, we're going to see a dramatic expansion in solar energy. We have the second most plentiful solar resources in the United States here in New Mexico. And up until now, frankly, there's just been just a smattering of solar projects in the state.
So how would this hurt the utilities, PNM and so on, in the oil and gas industries? I mean, would they leave the state? Would they give us gigantic rate hikes? What would be, in your estimation and in your studies, the result of a carbon cap, a 3% a year reduction?
Our data and our experts will show that this will have a minimal impact on ratepayers. The way that we've structured the program, the way that there's a phase-in program over 3 years, we anticipate less than a 1% increase in rates. So not only are we going to be solving climate change and creating an economic incentive for investors here, creating new jobs, but we've structured it in a way that's really going to have a minimal impact on rates. Now, PNM and the Oil and Gas Association are calling foul and they're saying, well, there's nothing that we can do. We also have experts that are going to show, indeed, if they just adopt best practices, they start adopting energy efficiency measures at their plants, energy efficiency measures at the oil and gas sites, they can begin to reduce emissions that actually will eventually save them money because they're using efficiency rather than burning more fossil fuels.
I think there's a fundamental problem, which is that they are set up to make money and send money to the shareholders, not to invest in society or do what's best for society. What is government supposed to do? Government is supposed to regulate that. And that's what we're asking for. We're asking them to protect us, basically, and to say, we're going to step in and take some action.
So why are they fighting it? I mean, they're spending money to fight this. Why?
PNM has itself, just one of the utilities fighting us, has said that they were going to spend $500,000 fighting this petition to cap carbon. It probably wouldn't even cost them $500,000 to reduce emissions in 1 year. So it's interesting why they're doing that. And I think one of the things is just arrogance, saying, we don't want you to tell us what to do.
Well, it's also the precedent. It's the
exactly.
Precedent for this state. It's the precedent for other states. The Oil and Gas Association clearly doesn't want this as something that would be copied in other jurisdictions. And the companies sell a product. They sell fossil fuels. And so they don't get much by doing energy efficiency because they're selling less product by being more efficient. So PNM, for example, has not a lot of incentive to do energy efficiency to save you, the consumer, money, to save you energy. They want to sell a product.
Well, I mean, the oil and gas industries sell fossil fuels. PNM sells the electricity. So if they're efficient at their own plant, that is, in theory, at least to their benefit. And if they switch to economical, renewable technologies, that's also to their benefit, isn't it?
Well, not when they can use cheap coal power in comparison to doing energy efficiency in people's homes, where, again, if people have more energy-efficient homes, they're going to have less energy. Use less energy, they're going to have less bills. PNM is selling less of a product.
But even in other ways, if we just changed all the light bulbs in New Mexico, we might not even need one coal plant. James Hansen says that we need to shut down every single coal plant if we're going to have a chance at really avoiding the worst effects of climate change.
And I think there's one thing that I want to help the listeners to understand, and we'll be talking about this more with Paul Epstein tomorrow, but we're in a state of tremendous climate change right now. We're in a state of literal change, and what scientists tell us that we should be looking for is a state of equilibrium. So we went from a state of equilibrium to a state of rapid change, which is what we're in. And achieving equilibrium again is no small task.
No, it's absolutely enormous. I mean, the challenge before us is really unprecedented. The necessity to dramatically reduce emissions before things happen, like the melting of the Greenland ice cap, the melting of the Antarctic, the acidification of the oceans.
Well, things that are already happening.
They are already happening. And to avoid what's called runaway climate change, we need immediate action. For example, although the global temperature has risen less than a degree, the temperature in the poles has increased by 5 degrees. And that's having a tremendous effect on communities up there, where communities are literally sinking into the permafrost. But it's also having another effect where methane gas, which is a very potent greenhouse gas, is being released in large quantities. And the more methane that is released, the more warming that we're going to have. The more warming we have, the more methane is going to be released from melting of the permafrost, so that we're going to have literally a runaway climate change. And we need to take every action that we can to begin reducing emissions dramatically, human-caused emissions, so that we don't get more naturally occurring emissions that will come from permafrost.
So are there other states that are doing things like this? Or I mean, last year we had the Western Climate Initiative folks on talking about it, and I don't know whether that's sort of held together or not. But in other words, is anybody besides New Mexico stepping up in the way that we are trying to do right now?
There's a bill that passed in California. It's called AB 32. And then there's a number of bills, actually, in Massachusetts. But no state that's in the middle of the country on
and
one
energy
of the coasts.
Producing. There's no energy producing state.
And there's
state.
No energy producing state.
So what are the citizens of New Mexico saying?
Well, we've had New Mexicans from all walks of life come and give public testimony about the need to dramatically reduce emissions. We've had Native Americans coming from Navajo Nation, for example. I had an elderly grandmother come up to me and she said, Shiaj, which means my son. This is very simple, very simple. And if you make a mess, you clean it up. And she had translated the problem into her own mindset, which was, our generation, our society has made an enormous mess that we're basically asking future generations, children, grandchildren, to clean up. And from her perspective, it's very easy. Look, we made this mess. We got to clean it up. We've had ranchers. We've had former oil and gas workers. We've had ranchers come up and talk about the cows that they have that are dying up in the Farmington area because being exposed to all of the contaminants from oil and gas drilling. We've had numerous young people come out and say, look, this is our future. It's an opportunity. We can be a clean energy state. We can create jobs. I want those jobs in the solar industry, but we need to be doing something about climate. We've had physicians, many, many physicians come out and say, look, this is the fundamental public health problem of our time. So New Mexicans really from all walks of life are coming out and doing something about this. As I mentioned, we have 17 other co-petitioner organizations that are involved with this. I think it's also interesting to note the opposition to this has primarily been limited to the oil and gas companies, the petroleum companies, and the utilities, the companies that make a lot of money by selling electricity.
So there's virtually no citizen grassroots movement against a carbon cap in New Mexico.
Well, there is one that I think has been artificially created by PNM. Again, I mentioned that PNM has been spending a lot of money. They estimate they're going to spend $500,000 on this case. Well, part of that is to do outreach, quote, outreach, and to organize a business community. For example, they just held a luncheon down in Albuquerque with the Greater Albuquerque Chamber of Commerce. Well, PNM is one of the main contributors to the Albuquerque Chamber of Commerce. So essentially, they're using their power and influence and money to be able to organize support. It's not a deep support.
The hearings to the Environmental Improvement Board of New Mexico to put in place a carbon cap start a week from today, that is Monday the 16th of August. If citizens want to get involved, should they show up in person or what should they do?
Well, first of all, you could go to our website, which is newenergyeconomy.org. And there it has the location and directions. But it's on Frontage Road near the outlets. The exact address is...
The Outlet Mall.
The Outlet Mall. The south of Santa Fe.
And the exact address is 33 Plaza La Prensa. But we would love to talk to you. You can call our office at 505-469-4060, and we'd be glad to talk to you about it. The EIB will be taking public testimony, so people are encouraged to come and voice really from the heart, like, how has climate change affected you, or what do you think should be done? So we're encouraging people to come out and speak, and you have 3 minutes to speak. And so the public does have an opportunity to be heard, or you can write. You can write to the Environmental Improvement Board, and you can just go to their website, and you can find out their address and send a comment in.
But I think the most important thing, that this is about democracy. This is about New Mexicans expressing their view that we need to do something different. And I've already been impressed by the breadth of support from all around the state, that people have come forward from all walks of life to say we need to do something. And now it's the opportunity for your listeners to get involved, to do something. I think there's a lot of times people feel powerless to do anything about climate change. They say, well, what can I do? You know, I can change my light bulbs, big deal. Well, this is a chance to really change the way that climate change is addressed in the United States, because if we do this in New Mexico, it is going to set a very powerful precedent, a very powerful message to our congressional representatives, a very powerful message to Congress that the states are serious. We're going to do this, and we're going to solve this problem with or without your leadership.
John Fogarty and Marielle Nanasi are with New Energy Economy, and they are on the web at newenergyeconomy.org. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're going to take a break right now, and when we come back, we'll be talking to attorneys Steve Michael and Bruce Frederick. Please stay tuned to KSFR. I'm very happy now to welcome Steve Michael. He's an attorney with the Western Resource Advocates, and he will be testifying next week before the New Mexico Environmental Improvement Board on the subject of carbon caps here in New Mexico. And Bruce Frederick is with us. He is an attorney with the New Mexico Environmental Law Center. Welcome, gentlemen, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
So let's talk about these regulations in some specificity. What actually are the regulations that are being proposed in front of the New Mexico Environmental Improvement Board?
Well, essentially the regulations would look at two sectors of New Mexico's economy, electric utilities and oil and gas operations. Those two sectors in New Mexico emit the overwhelming majority of greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide and methane, into the atmosphere. And so these regulations would instruct that those sectors reduce their greenhouse gas emissions in a manner that's consistent with what scientists are telling us needs to be done to avoid the most significant impacts of climate change.
And so what do the rules actually say? How much reduction do we need to do next year, the year after, and so on?
What the rules do is they set a baseline of 2010, and they tell electric utilities, oil and gas operators, that they must reduce 3% per year their greenhouse gas emissions. And these emissions have all been reported to NMED, the Environment Department, that they must reduce their emissions 3% per year from their 2010 levels. The regulation then calls for the Environment Department and the Environmental Improvement Board in 2014 to look at these regulations, see how they are comporting with what science is telling us needs to be done, see whether we're achieving those kinds of reduction results, and to the extent the regulations need to be modified to get them consistent with what science is saying, then they would be modified in 2014.
How are they actually supposed to achieve these 3% reductions per year?
This is Bruce Frederick, they can achieve them either through reductions at the source or through offsetting. either offsets that in other operations they own that aren't covered, or through offsets from other companies, other sources.
And so, for example, let's say that I am PNM and I've got this big, huge, gigantic coal plant, and New Mexico is in a state of economic growth and demanding ever more energy. What would be some ways, and is there assistance to these utilities, for example, to come up with ways to achieve that 3% reduction every year? In other words, are there some giant inefficiencies that are kind of low-hanging fruit that they can do immediately, and then what?
There are improvements to the efficiency of the operation of those plants that the utilities can do. How much they've done already remains to be seen. But by improving the efficiency of how they operate, improving the how much energy you get, how much electricity you get for a given fuel input, you can reduce your carbon dioxide emissions that way. Some of the more promising aspects, though, are things like energy efficiency for their customers. If their customers conserve electricity, the utilities can produce less. The less they produce, the less greenhouse gases they emit. Another option is obviously renewable energy. They can install solar generators, wind generators to augment the power that's coming out of their coal and gas plant. To the extent those renewable generators run, they can back down their fossil generators and reduce their greenhouse gases that way.
So if you and I reduce our energy by spending our own money to buy Energy Star appliances and turning out our lights and all of that stuff, they get to claim it as a reduction?
If it's reducing their output, then it would help them in their compliance. Now, keep in mind, though, that the utilities do have energy efficiency programs to provide assistance to customers to be more efficient so that at the end of the day, the customers do receive some, I don't know if subsidy is the word, they receive some assistance in deploying their own energy efficiency measures.
Help me out and help our listeners out with this. Utilities burn fossil fuels in order to create electricity, but what about oil and gas industries? They produce it, but the rest of us burn it. So how does that work? I mean, are we talking about the extraction and refining industries that are also burning so much fuel that they qualify under these regulations?
Yeah, we're actually, in response to some criticism or some ambiguities in our proposed rule, we're actually going to recommend some changes, and we will be regulating under our proposal combustion sources like refineries and things like that, treatment plants, processing plants, but not upstream sources like production wells and gathering systems. And what that means is there's a lot of methane and carbon dioxide leaks in the upstream system that can be contained through reasonable economic measures. And if they do that, the companies can use those to offset their emissions at their downstream sources. They could also that should also create a market for those offsets that they can sell to third parties.
Yeah, to get to your question, too, you're exactly right. What we're regulating here are the emissions from the production of oil and gas, the production, processing, refining. We're not regulating the combustion of those gases of themselves, the natural gas that you get in your homes, the oil, the gasoline that you use in your cars. Those are dealt with through other mechanisms. For example, the clean car standards at the federal level.
So, and I think what's important for people to understand is that on a federal level, transportation is being dealt with a lot more than utilities.
Utilities aren't being dealt with at all as far as greenhouse gases go.
When we talk about oil and gas industries, they are, in New Mexico or I suppose anywhere, to some extent decentralized. So how are you regulating this? In other words, is it by company? Is it by production location or what?
It's going to be by a source. And the oil and gas companies in the testimony they filed complained that it looked like we wanted to aggregate a lot of dispersed sources. Like there are something like 50,000 oil and gas wells out there in New Mexico, and they thought we wanted to aggregate all those and treat those as single sources. And our rule isn't going to do that. We're going to regulate individual sources like refineries, like treatment facilities and processing facilities that are discrete places.
So we're talking about regulations that have never existed before in the state of New Mexico or really much of anywhere, regulating big industries that probably don't want to be regulated. Who enforces this? Let's say that these regulations are adopted by the state of New Mexico. Who enforces them and how?
The Environment Department would enforce those regulations. The Environmental Improvement Board is considering the regulations. If the board adopts the regulations, then the Environment Department would be responsible for implementing and enforcing them. If there are appeals under those regulations, appeals would go to the board and then to a court.
Would there, and this is just sort of out of curiosity, would there be any positive effects of these regulations on pollution that comes from non-CO2, non-greenhouse gas pollution that comes from burning fossil fuels as a result of these regulations?
Yeah, those are ancillary benefits that you would get. When, for example, when a coal plant, if it is emitting less CO2 by its nature, it's also going to be emitting less NOx, less SO2, a variety of particulates. So there are a lot of health benefits associated with reducing some of the greenhouse gas emissions that these facilities are putting into the atmosphere.
And let me just add, the oil and gas companies have complained that there aren't going to be out-of-state offsets available under our proposal, but the fact that we're restricting it to in-state offsets means that we get all those ancillary benefits, those local benefits of reduction in other pollutants.
Okay. And I guess that you're not allowing out-of-state offsets because how would you enforce it?
Well, that's certainly one of the big issues with out-of-state offsets. Now, there are some registries out there that do certify out-of-state offsets and certify international offsets. But as far as NMAD and its ability to go out-of-state or out of its jurisdiction and assure that those offsets are valid, yeah, there is some limitation there. The other thing is what Bruce mentioned as well. Those offsets can provide not only health benefits to New Mexico, but also economic benefits. If you're, for example, reducing biogas emissions, reducing methane emissions at landfills, that's business activity and economic activity in the state. So to the extent we're regulating these sources in the state, we want to keep that economic activity that it's driving in the state as well, so that there can be an economic benefit associated with these regulations.
We're talking to Steve Michael from Western Resource Advocates and Bruce Frederick with the New Mexico Environmental Law Center. Let's talk about that for a moment. How would this kind of regulation, which, of course, when there's ever any regulation, you have industry crying out that it will have economically adverse consequences. How could it have economically positive consequences for New Mexico?
Well, first, let me talk a little bit about what industry is proclaiming to be the negative economic impact of these regulations. And one of the features of these regulations that I think is important for people to understand is that unlike a lot of cap-and-trade mechanisms where polluters are required to pay for every ton of CO2 that they emit, these regulations approach it from a different perspective. They say, okay, polluters, we're not going to make you pay for all the tons you emit, but we're going to make you pay to reduce your emissions. So instead of, let's say you've got a source that's emitting 100,000 tons of CO2 into the atmosphere. Instead of making them, and you want to reduce that by 3,000 tons, by 3%, instead of making them pay a fee for every ton they're emitting, which is 97,000 tons, we're making them pay to reduce just the 3,000 tons. And the economic difference between those two approaches is huge. And the neat thing about it is you get exactly the same carbon reduction in either approach. It's just that when you're approaching it from a reduction standpoint instead of an allowance standpoint, you're creating a much lower economic impact than you would through some of the other programs that have been floated either federally or locally.
What if they just don't do it? Are there punitive measures or what happens?
these regulations are being adopted in part under the Air Quality Control Act, state law, and there's penalties for noncompliance with that act. Also, there may be something like injunctive relief.
What does that mean?
Injunctive relief means a court would order them to comply with the regulations, and if there was failure to comply, then they could be held in contempt, which could involve either money, penalties, or incarceration.
Yeah, Mary, if I can, I just wanted to follow up a little bit more on this economic impact, because I think it's very important for your listeners to understand that there is an economic cap in this regulation. We don't think that cap's going to be met because it's set very high. It's set at $50 a ton. What that means is if a source spends $50 per ton to reduce their emissions and they can't get there, they can stop. They're considered compliant. Like I said, carbon reduction should not cost anywhere near $50, at least in the early years. But what that cap does is it provides some certainty as to what the maximum economic impact is going to be. And what's so critical here is to understand that for the electric utilities and the price of electricity that customers see, this is going to increase their bills less than 1% per year. I mean, and, you know, when you look at the amount that electric bills have been going up in the state over the last few years, this is nothing. In the oil and gas sector, you've got an industry whose price of gas, price of oil probably fluctuates 100% or more within a matter of months or can. These regulations are going to affect the commodity price, the end price of those products by less than 1% a year. And so I think that's very important to understand that the economic cost of this regulation, not considering all the benefits, is going to be very, very small.
And of course, always keeping in mind, and we will be talking about this more later this week, that the cost of not doing anything in the long run is very, very high.
And that's the whole point of this, is we need to get started. This is a huge problem out there that no one's addressing, and we need to address it. And New Mexico should not be waiting for the region, for the nation, for the world to act. Everybody needs to move forward as fast as they can and as much as they can if we've got a chance of dealing with this issue.
What if new, for example, new power plants, new utilities are built? How do they, I mean, they can't reduce because they didn't exist in 2010. What happens then?
What the regulations propose are benchmarks for new sources. We don't want to penalize new sources and tell them that they can't emit any greenhouse gases. So what it does is it sets a benchmark that they can either beat or not beat. If they beat it, they get credits that they can use at other operations that also need to comply. But what happens, and this is part of the reason for the reassessment in 2014, is to see how much of our emission reductions are actually being offset by new source emissions, and can we adjust? And what we would have to do is adjust our reduction goals to make sure that it does account for growth or for the emissions caused by new sources.
And let me just add, if a new source comes in, it doesn't have to meet that benchmark just with emissions and reduction controls at the source. They can come in with offsets as well to meet their obligation. Because, and the reason for this is, of course, is that global warming's a global phenomenon, and these are long-lived gases. They're well mixed in the atmosphere, and they stay up there for decades sometimes. So it doesn't matter whether the reduction occurs at the source or someplace else, as long as we're reducing levels.
Now, one of the things that this regulation, this proposed regulation says, is that if there is federal law that comes in that is passed to regulate greenhouse gases, then the New Mexico law would no longer be necessary or applicable. What if the federal law were considerably weaker than New Mexico's law?
It would still, this regulation would still sunset. You know, as Bruce mentioned, this is a global issue. You know, frankly speaking, the emission reductions that New Mexico achieves are going to make very little difference in what happens to the issue of global warming in and of themselves. What we're hoping with this regulation is that we can show other jurisdictions, you can act, you can go forward, and if enough jurisdictions do act, that it will make a difference. But at the end of the day, this is a problem that needs to be solved at the federal level and the international level. And once the feds step in and do something, that's going to have a lot more impact than anything that New Mexico can do on its own.
And it's important to point out, the opposition always says that, you know, we admit that New Mexico acting alone won't solve the problem of global warming. And that's true, but they're assuming no other jurisdiction is going to act. I think we can be a model for other states to act. If you compare our proposal with other proposals, you'll see that ours is 5 or 6 pages long, and theirs are often thousands of pages long or hundreds of pages long. Ours is vastly simpler. If we can get ours off the ground, then there is a real good chance that the same thing could be implemented quite simply in other states by other state legislatures and regulatory boards.
What have your conversations with the various industries, fossil fuel burning industries, been like? In other words, are they all just monolithically opposed to any regulation whatsoever? Do they see that climate change is a problem and want to help in some way? Are they branching out into solar and wind? What's going on?
It depends on who you're talking to. Some of the industry folks do recognize climate change is a problem. They just don't think New Mexico should be moving out in front of the issue. They think we should wait until there's federal action, whenever they may be. Other industry folks, you know, range from, no, we don't have to do anything, to, there's not even a problem here that we need to address. So it really does depend.
Yeah, the way I divide it out is the utilities generally, in fact, across the board, seem to have no problem with climate change or climate science. They totally believe it's happening, I think in part because it's built into their rate structure. You know, it has to be accounted for in their rates somehow, and Steve probably knows more about that than I do. The oil and gas industry, in general, they did provide a witness that that tried to counter climate science and the fact of global warming very ineffectively, but since it's not built into their rates and they have nothing to gain, they're against it.
You know, one of the things that we saw in some of the testimony that was filed in the case was claims, you know, particularly that up in the Four Corners area, that this is going to create a death spiral, you know, and the industry is just going to pack up and leave the state. And in fact, if you read most of the folks that have looked at this and looked at the options for reducing greenhouse gases, one of the biggest short-term opportunities is using natural gas instead of coal. And so most economists feel that natural gas is really going to see a boom time associated with climate change regulation, which is going to be very beneficial to the Four Corners region and other parts of the state.
Except that there's so many people who are against drilling because hydraulic fracturing is toxic to their water supply, or they feel that it is, or there are studies that have shown that
That's very much an issue that needs to be grappled with. That's right. We don't know what's in those chemicals that they're using to fracture those seams.
So the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is really a group of some of the most distinguished scientists in the world who have been working on this in, I think you could say, of sound and probably somewhat conservative manner, have come up with the numbers that we need to be 25% below 1990 levels of greenhouse gas emissions. And of course, we're way above 1990 levels already. By the year 2020, that's 10 years from now, and 80% below 1990 levels by the year 2050. First of all, do our regulations that you are testifying on behalf of next week, are they pretty much in accordance with those kinds of what seemingly quite drastic numbers?
To the extent we know what those numbers in 1990 were, they are. And one thing to keep in mind is you had mentioned that we're far, far, you know, emitting a whole lot more than we were in 1990. That may not actually be the case. We know that from the year 2000 until 2008, our emissions actually dropped a little bit in the state.
In New Mexico.
And probably elsewhere as well. And there are a lot of reasons for that. Part of it may be the recession. Part of it has to do with the fact that there's a lot more renewable energy. A lot of states have renewable energy standards that are requiring utilities to serve a pretty substantial percent of their energy with renewable resources. So there are a lot of things going on that have helped us manage it over at least the last 8 years. Now, what happened between 1990 and 2000, it's sort of hard to say. There is some information out there, but we're not real sure exactly what those levels were in 1990. So the best that we can do, we have crafted this regulation to put us on track to achieve what we think would result in that level of emission reductions by those dates.
And when you look at the bigger picture, I mean, you know, by the year 2050, when most of us who are listening to this probably won't even be on the, well, maybe our younger people will, but most of us won't even be around. But 80% below 1990 levels, what kind of big picture energy production world do you envision?
What I see is our energy needs being served almost entirely with renewables. I mean, basically what that means is you look at what's serving us today, what resources and what energy resources are serving us today, subtract 80% of that, and assume that all the growth between now and 2050 is served with zero carbon emitting resources. You're right. That's a change to our economy. It's a major restructuring.
And it's a change to our infrastructure,
it's
above all.
It's a change to everything. And what I see happening is most of our needs will be served with renewables, hopefully renewables like solar, wind. There may be some nuclear, maybe not. It's sort of, I don't know. But the role of fossil fuels will be very limited in the long term. You know, it will be mostly gas, and it will mostly be used for firming up intermittent renewable resources. And what that means is at the times that renewable resources aren't available because of cloud cover, whatever, those gas resources could be deployed to make sure that the energy is still going to customers.
If people are concerned about this issue, they want their voices to be heard about climate change and this regulation in particular, what should they do?
The most direct thing they can do is show up at the hearing, which will begin on August 16th and run through the entire week. If they can't do that, then they can email Joyce Medina at the State Environment Department and email their comments in supporting the rule. And ask it to be accepted into the record. They should also get in touch with their gubernatorial candidates and tell them that this is an important issue and that New Mexico needs to act on it, and also talk to their legislators.
And talk to the congressional delegation in New Mexico. I think generally our delegation is pretty supportive of acting on climate change, but it never hurts to reinforce that.
And ladies and gentlemen, Joyce Medina's email is joyce.medina@state.nm.us.
She'll be thanking me for that.
Well, I hope people write enough emails that she will be. Steve Michael is an attorney with the Western Resource Advocates, and Bruce Frederick is an attorney with the New Mexico Environmental Law Center. Thanks both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, jazz.